Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 242. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, and comment on social media. Just helps us to continue to highlight the great people doing fantastic things in our profession. I also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Gym Aware, for sponsoring this episode. Only partner with companies that I believe in. Gym Aware is by far the gold standard when it comes to velocity-based training and some fantastic people as well. So if you're in the market for that or any of the other products that our sponsors rep, you know, please reach out to them and at least give them an opportunity, or at least tell them thank you for sponsoring the show. This week I'm joined by Dr. Rob Bell. Got a chance to get to know him a little bit through being at our through social media through the years, but then also coming to our clinic up in Noblesville and then speaking at the NFL Combine recently, and just a wealth of information. He's a sports psych coach. He's an author, speaker. He's done a little bit of everything. He's been a pro golf caddy. He's a professor. He's just had a great journey along the way. And so, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing.
Absolutely, Coach Ron. I'm excited, man. Thanks.
Rob, I always talk a little bit about, I used to go through the whole journey experience, and lay that all out there. But rather than do that, I think what I like to do is kind of hone in on, which one of those experiences or which stop along the way kind of best defines who you are today.
Boy, that's a great one, man. I kind of look at it like this. I mean, I never got it. I never got it. All in high school, there'd be people that would be coaching me and stuff like that. And I was the one that just tried to get by on talent. And yeah, there'd be bouts of working hard and stuff like that. But when I got to college, I blew it. And I totally messed up and ruined kind of any opportunity I had. And I managed to get through college. I mean, I still used my intelligence to get through. I guess that was my talent. But when I got to grad school, I always look back to that one because I was given a shot. I got into Temple University. I got an assistantship, and I wasn't going to blow it. I was not going to blow it. And I always got back to, this was a while ago, and I always remember that quote by Lance Armstrong. It's like, if you ever get a second chance at life, you got to go all the way. And I felt like I was given a second chance there. So it was like, I mean, I was a B student all through high school and college because I never wanted to study. Like, why study? But when I got into grad school, that I was reading everything. I mean, 9/11 happened. I was in grad school, and at Temple University, they kept the school open. And I still went to that night class because I was like, I've got to be there. And there was like, it was me and like one other person in class. I don't even think the teacher showed up or something, but it was like, I'm every chance that I got, that one right there. And then it was just, running marathons and triathlons at that point, and really just that discipline piece then just really took off.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you. You got to grab hold of those moments. What in that journey, you don't get to be, an author and an accomplished speaker and have the career that you've had without making some mistakes. What's maybe the biggest mistake you've made and kind of how you learn from it? I'm not just talking today. I'm talking like through the whole time here.
Oh, right. One of the biggest mistakes that I made, I was caddying. My very first event I was ever caddying on the PGA Tour. I was caddying for one of my golfers that we just started working together that week on the mental game. And I'm caddying for him. He's playing really, really well. We go up this is the second day of the tournament. We go on to the ninth hole, and he's playing really well. I look up in the scoreboard, and he's in first place. And it says Christian, like 600 par. And I remember thinking, I was like, that says Bell, 600 par. Like in my mind, I'm the best caddy in the world, the best sports psychologist. We're going to win this tournament. I'm going to cash a nice check. Tiger's going to call me up. This is great. Right. So I get caught up in the moment. He tossed me a golf ball, and I grab the golf ball, and I'm cleaning it. Ninth green. We got nine more holes to go in the day, second day of the tournament. And as I'm cleaning the ball drops in the bag. I reach in, I grab it, and I toss it to him. He makes the putt. We go into the 10th tee box, 9 more holes to go. And then I remember it was like this feeling of dread kind of overcame me because it was like, Gary, I said, that was a Callaway 2 blue circle, right? And he wants to know why I'm asking. He looks and it's a Callaway 4 blue circle. So I'm thinking that I'm the man, I'm the best ever. I hand him the wrong golf ball. Rules of golf are very, very specific. You have to start and end each hole with the same ball. At the end, you can do anything you want with it.
Right.
Well, the rules of golf also say you call all penalties on yourself. Call the rules official over, 2-shot penalty.
Oh, no.
So he goes from first to third or fourth. And I can tell you what, the voice then that went in my head totally changed about how awful I was. I was really going to set the bag down right there and go kill myself.
Right.
Because how could you be so stupid?
Right, sure.
And the thing that I learned from is he didn't talk to me for a couple holes. And that's a long time to be quiet, you know, and you're trying to help out and all stuck inside my own head. And I remember on the one tee box, probably 14th tee box, he stops and says, look, I need you. We're going to get that shot back. Don't worry about it, but I need you. And it really taught me the power there of respond, don't react. Because I think when we react, my reaction was about, If it was me, I'm just going to fire this guy, right? Somebody else could carry the bag and give me yardages.
Right.
But when we respond, we're cool, calm, and collected. And I think our reactions are usually incorrect, but our response is, you know, we think of a first responder, somebody trained to handle that situation. Right. So that was the biggest mistake, man, I made in competition. And
that's an awesome story. Yeah. It's not awesome to live through, but it's an awesome to learn from for sure. And I think that's important as coaches. I think, you know, we're all going to have those moments. We're going to have that moment where we make a mistake. But I think just like in the game of golf where etiquette is paramount, I think in strength and conditioning, acknowledging your mistakes either to your employer or to more importantly to the players and to say, hey, you know what? I messed up. You know, and that was a mistake on my part, and I'll fix it, and I'll work harder to make it, you know, better the next time. And other athletes are not going to have to deal with that because of you guys, you know, responding so greatly. I think that kind of humility amongst your you know, your subordinates per se with the players or with your leaders, I think is something that's, you know, everybody wants to seem like they got it all together, but you know, that's not human. You know, nobody responds to a robot.
Yeah, I heard a great quote. Coach said, "You know, if you want to be great in the field, you got to be vulnerable."
Yeah, got to do that.
I think and that is so true, man. It's we got to make our mess and turn it into our message. You know, we got to make our test, make it our testimony, and that's where, you know, that's when we relate to people.
I love that. I use mess as your message, but I've never used test as your testimony. I'm still on that one from you. I'll give you credit for like 3 times, and then it's mine.
For sure, man. I think I borrowed it from Oprah, probably.
Yeah, right. I think we all do at some point. Well, you know, I didn't know that about you with the whole caddy thing. I did not know that about you. It surprises me too, because I think, you know, my impression was caddies were always that tactical coach or that person that was that strategist. But being having that mental component in your back pocket when you're playing, you know, over the course of 2 or 3 days or whatever it is. I think that's freaking phenomenal. Talk a little bit how you got into that and kind of how you've been able to, you know, parlay that into a little bit of a career there.
Yeah, sure. So I'll only caddy like for my clients and I'm a good caddy. I'm a good fill-in caddy. I'm not a great caddy. You know, the difference between a good caddy and great caddy is they know what their player is thinking before he's even thinking it.
Yeah.
You know, so the caddying is all about time and like great coaching is all about time. And the thing I love about it so much is, it's the closest thing to being, you know, an on-the-field coach. You know, I'm not going to be, you know, head basketball coach that's going to be on the floor or anything like that. So, I mean, that's the best opportunity. And just to be of service, just to be able to help people. I think great caddies can save their golfer, you know, one shot around. And that makes all the difference. You know, people ask, well, are those bags heavy? I kind of say it like this, and this is the thing when it comes to coaching, right? It's like, hey, we shot 67. He shot 74.
Yeah.
Right. So when we're doing well, those bags aren't heavy at all, man. It's just when he's playing bad, then bags get a little bit heavy sometimes. But it's, I mean, I love talking with caddies, and they're just so great coaches too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think – I think a message that, you know, strength coaches that are listening can take away from that was, I think that you kept your ear to the ground and found an opportunity for your skill set to be of use in maybe an area that it wasn't being used, you know. And I think as strength coaches, that's something that I get a little frustrated about, where, you know, we all complain about there's not very many jobs and, you know, there's the lack of opportunity, this, that, the other. But I mean, we have to grow this profession. We have to, you know, seek out things like tactical strength conditioning, where, you know, police and fire and SWAT were not, you know, they weren't using strength conditioning before, but now that they are, they're becoming more efficient first responders and things like that. We need to keep finding those opportunities and keeping our tentacles open, you know, open and to creating things out of nothing and creating opportunities for ourselves, you know. So I really like that. You know, I think the big buzzword right now and the big kind of debate amongst coaching is mental toughness, right? You know, can you develop that? Is that something that, you know, did you as a strength coach, do you have an obligation to create that, you know, in those 8 months outside of the season? What is your take on mental toughness? And then, you know, let's talk a little bit about how to best develop that if it can be developed.
Sure, absolutely. Well, mental toughness, again, it's simple. It's very simple. It's just not easy. Mm-hmm. So all mental toughness is, it's how we perform well under pressure, how we do in those half two moments. And then the other part is, how do we deal, how do we handle, and how do we cope with the adversity, you know, with the setbacks that happen. That's all mental toughness is. And I really think then mental toughness, what I've seen is it's caught more than it's taught. I think it's caught more than it's taught. So it's like, you know, if you're the most mentally tough athlete, it's not going to win you a championship, but if you don't have mental toughness, it will lose it for you. And so that whole, I mean, I believe the brain is a muscle, and what we're trying to do as coaches, at least from my standpoint, is to put them in situations where there's going to be adversity, there's going to be setbacks, they're going to fail from it. And then that's the importance of a coach, to be able to come in there and say, all right, what did you learn from that situation? You know, are we blaming other people there? Did you not want to be in the situation? Where did your mind go under that pressure? Do you start thinking about what other people think about you? And what happens? How do you cope when that adversity hits? You know, just totally check out, you know, and then it gets back to like your why. Sure. So I think all those are coachable moments, and we're teaching those, but then when they're going to be in those situations, they're going to catch it. You know, I've never met an athlete that didn't choke. I mean, a professional athlete. I've met, you know, okay athletes that didn't choke, but they weren't in those situations. You know, yes. I've never met a professional athlete that did not choke. And that's the importance of a coach, is to come in there. And I want my athletes choking in practice, because I want them to understand that's where your mind's going to go in the game.
Right.
So if we are under pressure, if we are under that stress and duress, where does our mind go? What do we start thinking about? Because then that's the coachable moments pieces. Especially in the strength condition world, in the weight room. I mean, we all know mental toughness is, I mean, that's the laboratory for that stuff. Are they willing to just do one more?
Right.
Are they willing to coach up others, you know, and focus on their teammates more than just themselves?
You know, yeah. So, I always tell you that, you know, the weight room is the best laboratory for life, because you come with a plan, you get smacked in the face, you have to deal with adversity, you have to deal with success, you have to work as a team. You know, and you're doing all that in one workout, you know, and your energy directly affects how the workout goes or doesn't go. You know, I think that's so important. And then you turn around and you talk about the other part of that is, just like strength and conditioning, you know, growth occurs, you know, hypertrophy occurs when you push the muscle past its present capacity. So I think it's the same thing with our own mental toughness, is it's in those moments of adversity and despair that you grow the most as a person, you know, and you come out more resilient on the other side. And so I couldn't agree with you more, but I guess my question would be, you know, do you have an obligation as a coach then to put them in those adverse situations? I mean, one of the common cliches in strength and conditioning is, I'm going to throw the physiology textbook out of the window and really drop these guys in the grease today and put them through a tough workout when it doesn't maybe make sense physiologically. You know, like a morning agility, sometimes people will argue that doesn't really make sense physiologically. But mentally, as a former athlete, you know, and having gone and played football at a pretty high level, I think those things were paramount to me in my development as an athlete to be able to handle anything that was thrown at me.
Yeah. you know, the workouts that I remember, especially like in soccer, was running that hill. And that hill then came to symbolize, you know, how bad do you want it? Are you willing to keep, you know, pushing forward? And there was a coach, man, that teaches us the importance of a coach, that training is, if this is a privilege. Mm-hmm. Man, you don't have to do that. Like, my kids will ask me, do I have to vacuum? Man, you don't have to vacuum.
Right.
You get to vacuum. You get to train.
That's right.
And pressure is a privilege, right? Like, you want to be in those pressure circumstances. And I always say, like, with coaching, what I think's important is I just try to outline, this is my philosophy when it comes to it. This is how I am going to coach. And you got to give me some dialogue and some feedback on where are going to be the sticking points for you. Like, are you going to need me? Do you need somebody in your ear all the time?
Right.
Do you want that support? Do you want to always be just encouraged? Like, what is it that, how do you respond best? I think asking them those questions are big. And not always saying, hey, I'm going to cater exactly to how you are, but just learning, I think, more than about the individual, you know, kind of like the questions you ask, right? Like, hey, what are the biggest things you've overcome in your life?
Right, right.
And then we see there's a common denominator. Those that have overcome a lot of stuff in their life are more mentally tough. It was caught. They had to catch that situation.
Yeah, I think that's the hard thing as coaches sometimes is there, and that's where the art comes in, I believe, where it's that fine line of what's too much physically. You know, you see some of the rhabdo cases and things like that versus what's, you know, what's pushing the line on developing them mentally tough and making them more resilient over time. And, you know, I think we have to, as coaches, I think the important step there is obviously, you know, you have to be able to recognize distress. I mean, that's the medical part. But the other part of that is coming back later on and saying, you know, reminding them of those situations when they're in those moments in a game that, hey, no, we've been here before. We've been, you know, we've been backed up on our own 2-yard line in practice and we've had to go 98 yards. We've done that before. You know, we've had to make the stop to win the game, you know, and so we have to remind them of those things in the moment, you know, or that message is lost, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the number one source of confidence is past performance. How do we know we can do something? Well, we've done it before, you know. It's just that the only thing that changes is the stage.
Yeah.
We've done these things before.
Yeah, I'm reading your book right now, that No One Gets There Alone, and, you know, it's a fantastic read, and, you know, I think – it's, you know, a great message, just like The Hinge, and we'll talk about that as well. But, you know, there's been so many times in my life that, you know, that I've had to have help along the way. And I think any time, again, going back to that vulnerability piece where, you know, we want to act as if we got there on our own, but you don't have, you know, in this profession, if you don't have mentors to teach you, you know, the art of coaching, like we're talking about, then it doesn't happen for you. You know, talk a little bit about, you know, the book and kind of the message behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I had this incident in this half Ironman that I was doing. I wasn't prepared, didn't train all that. I was my ego, and I don't recommend it. And I had a flat tire on the race. This guy stops his own race to help me change a tire. And the only thing I kept asking myself after was would you stop?
Right.
Would you stop? And the answer was no, I wouldn't have. And the reason why, it didn't have anything to do with life, and it didn't have anything to do with me not being a good person. It had to do with competition, man.
Yeah.
Competition, you know, that's his problem. He should have been more prepared. But now that incident right there, that Hinge moment, changed everything, because I'm going into every situation not focused on myself, focused on who is it that I'm going to be able to help here? What teammate I'm going to be able to help? If we were to change that mindset going into a workout, not wondering, hey, how am I going to do? Because then it's performance driven and it's all about me.
Right.
It's, if we went into it saying, who am I going to be able to help here? Well, then what we create is we create a better us. And then when we're going to need that, then it's going to be there. Then it's all about creating a better us and then a better you.
Right.
And that's where I think a better us makes a better you. A better you makes a better us. So that's the piece that I'm just always now stressing with my athletes, that, again, I never got it earlier. I wish I did, man. But now I finally got it. And the beauty about it is we can't help out anyone else without also helping out ourselves. So the fact that, let's say if I'm doing a workout and I'm encouraging other people, I can't turn around and then say, you know, kind of quit on myself. It just doesn't work like that. Like, that encouragement of encouraging other people comes right back to me.
Right, right. I think, you know, you go back to something like Maxwell's book with, you know, five levels of leadership, and the highest being permission-based leadership. And, you know, you don't get permission-based leadership without being selfless and to give to others. And, you know, and then, you know, it's the old adage, you know, rising tide raises all ships. You know, I think by you making others better, it makes yourself better. And, you know, I think that ultimately, you know, we have to have that kind of self, as coaches, we have to have that selfless mentality, or you're not going to last. If you're in this for yourself, this profession will beat you down so fast, you know, and it's just not worth it. You don't get paid enough, and you don't get enough time on your, you know, all those things. So that's what's great about strength and conditioning coaches is they're some of the most selfless people on the planet with what they do. But we have to continue to strive to find that within ourselves and to continue to strive to send that message to our athletes, because they all are going to be leaders of their own families at the very least, but typically athletes are leaders within their communities and businesses and the whole deal. And so I love that. You spoke recently at the NFL Combine, and it's always fun because, you know, that's a tough crowd now. I mean, those are some of the best in the world at what they do. And then you turn around and it's like, okay, well, I don't have a goatee and a bald head, and I'm not 300 pounds and ripped up, you know, how do I go into this room and, you know, captivate these guys and send a message of how to win when, you know, there's the Super Bowl champion, the past Super Bowl champion, and the past Super Bowl champion before him are all in the same room, you know?
Yeah.
Thought you did a fantastic job, but one of the things you talked about was, you know, those hinge moments, those moments in time where, you know, they could have gone one way or the other, you know, and so important to identify and be able to disseminate those moments and reflect on those moments as you grow as a person, you know, it was unexpected and very much appreciated. But you talked about my hinge moment, you know, of walking onto a football field and having a coach take me to the side and let me watch practice and set me down a path that, you know, has taken me around the world and
yep.
me to coach, you know, some incredible people. But talk about, you know, how do we best identify those moments to our athletes? How do we best identify those moments in ourselves when they happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I kind of said this line, like, we can't connect the dots looking forward. We don't know what moment is going to be a hinge moment. Mm-hmm. And we can only connect the dots looking backwards, seeing the impact of that one moment, that one person. So every moment's important. Every rep is important. Every lift is important every single day. And that's where if we take the same attitude and importance on every talk that we give, every lecture that we give, every time we're going to interact with someone, if that's the most important one, then we're giving ourselves the best opportunity for that hinge to connect. If we don't take action, if we say, yeah, I really don't need to be there and stuff like that, then we'd have no idea. And that's the thing is, the way that our hinge is going to connect in our own life. And I thought it took me a while to get it, but we've got to just be the hinge for other people.
Yeah.
If we're that hinge, if we're that person, then our moment's going to happen as well. And if we can focus again, it gets back to that service piece. Who can I help today? Who can I connect to somebody else? That's going to come back. And is it always going to work out in our favor? No, not at all. Are we going to get hurt by it? Yeah. Are we going to get taken advantage of? Yeah.
Yeah.
But do it anyways, because that's the right thing to do. And knowing that if we plant enough seeds, then those trees are going to be fruitful.
You never know when that's, you know, I'm glad you said that, because you never know when that's going to bear its fruit or when it's going to come back to you. I tell a story often. I wrote it in my book. You know, we had a player that we were oil and water. You know, he was a drug addict. He was, you know, not a good student, you know, wasn't a very good person at the time. And, you know, and I, you know, just being a very principle based, pretty clean cut guy, you know, we were just oil and water, you know. And the guy shows up to our NFL pro day with a bowl of water and a rat dog, and goes around to all the NFL agents barefoot asking them if they had water for his dog, you know. And then he borrows somebody's cleats and runs a 4.39 and he gets drafted, you know. Long story short, he gets kicked out, you know, the league basically for drugs. He gets court mandated, you know, military service. And 6 years later, I'm sitting in my office and here comes this freaking, you know, 6-foot stud in a, you know, Marine uniform, you know, walking in my office with a tear in his eye. And he's like, look, coach, you're the only one that wouldn't put up my shit, you know, and I just want to say thank you. You know, those kind of moments, that's why you do what you do. You know, and you know, even though I beat my head against the wall thinking I didn't reach that kid, you got to pour into him because you never know if you're going to be that hinge or you're going to be that one catalyst that might help sit down. And I don't know if that was me. I think it was more military than anything, but the fact that, you know, that we had a contribution there is huge.
Yeah. I mean, I always look at it too. It's like, you know, we're either telling ourselves or listening to ourselves. And if we're listening, we just hope that we're listening to, you know, coach's voice that's going to be in on us.
Right.
But the one part about the hands, I know this to be true. No matter how bad things are, no matter how, it only takes one. It takes, you know, one catch to turn a whole game around. It takes one play, one moment. You know, it takes one game to turn an entire season around. It takes one person to change, you know, that life. And since we don't know when that's coming, that's the piece that's important.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. Well, man, we end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
The best piece of coaching advice I ever received, you know, we just hear this one all the time. It's just never, ever give up. I mean, I can go deeper. I can get a whole bunch of them, but that's what it boils down to. If we never give up, I believe we will be successful. The game of life teaches us that. It's a game of attrition.
Yep. No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, it's the question is, can you not do it, but how much are you willing to sacrifice to do it sometimes? Right. You know, I think that's 100% true. What about a book, app, website recommendation?
So a book recommendation, I mean, I read all the time. I mean, I always think, like, if you're a coach, you're paid to read. Yeah. I mean, you're paid to read.
You're paid to do a lot of things. Read better be one of them for sure.
Yeah. So one of them, one that I just kind of finished, it was just Wherever I Wind Up. And that was R.A. Dickey's book. And that's a fantastic book about faith, about perseverance. And, highly recommend that book. Fantastic.
Yeah. That's awesome. You're not a big app guy. I know you said Waze was kind of the app, but any websites you check out?
I mean, I probably do like podcasts. I like your podcast, Jocko's podcast, James Altershore's. I kick those around anytime I'm in the car. I disengage from all kind of sports radio and talk like that. And I just think we got to feed our mind with the audio books or podcasts.
Right. Yeah, mobile university, right? That's what I try to do as well.
That's good, man. I'm going to borrow that one, coach.
Well, man, you know, like I said, you know, as we talked offline and through the last couple of weeks and whatnot, I mean, I appreciate anybody that is willing to put themselves out there to create resources, to live their life the right way, and then try to help others as well, man. And so I just appreciate what you're doing, how you're doing it, and really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks, coach. You want to? Should we give a book away for one of your listeners? Yeah,
that'd be fantastic. We'll put this up. Anybody that comments, we'll run it for a week, and then we'll draw a name.
Best hinge moment.
Best. There you go. Best hinge moment. Let's do it. I like it.
All right, man.
Best hinge moment. And then as we head out here, where can everybody find you? What website?
So my website is drrobbell.com. And then I'm always on Twitter. That's my best ADD. So it's just at Dr. Rob Bell.
Awesome, man. Awesome. We appreciate it, buddy. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, coach.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.